Hi, friends. I'm Pearson Cross, the host of Bayou to Beltway. Today, we are going to talk about Love Our Schools, Link and Learn, an initiative that was fostered by the three people that I have with me today to talk about this. Let me introduce them. First, Dr. Anna Osland is Director of Workforce and Policy Initiatives at One Acadiana. She has a PhD from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. We're also joined by Mr. Todd Mouton, who's a Lafayette native, a graduate of Boston College. He's been working in the nonprofit sector for a while, and he has been executive director of the Pew Foundation since 2017. We are also joined by Ryan DiMaggio, who is CEO of Shoemaker Foundation, focused on disaster recovery. He's a native of Sunset, quite proud of it, I think, and as he should be, and went to Southern Law School. So together they have created this Love Our Schools, Link and Learn initiative that's really exciting, and we're debuting it here to let everybody know about it. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
My apologies for mangling your names if I did it. So tell me, what's the Love Our Schools, Link and Learn initiative? How did this initiative begin? And what are some of the needs that the initiative addresses?
Todd, you want me to jump in?
Take it away.
That'd be great. Well, so Link and Learn is kind of the Love Our Schools 2020 version. We joined forces with the Lafayette Parish School System back in March or April when COVID really hit, and asked the superintendent, Dr. Irma Trosclair, what is it that we could do to assist them this year? And very candidly, she said, you have to help us bridge the digital divide. We really don't know how we're going to teach and educate all these children virtually. And so the three of us, through our foundations and our organizations, jumped in basically to come up with some short-term and long-term solutions to help connect families to the internet. Right now in Lafayette Parish, there's about 7,000 children in 5,000 homes that are not connected to the internet. And what we've done over the last 6 or 7 months is to help rectify that problem.
Well, that's a big task. So how did you start it? So you identified a need, you talked to LPSS, got that 7,000 figure, so that would be... Now, is that public and private, or is that just public schools?
Only public schools.
Okay. So I think last I looked, Lafayette Parish had about between 30 and 31,000 public school students, so we're looking at about nearly 25% of those students lack internet access at home. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And what are the needs that you address, and what does internet access have to do with education, and why is it so crucial right now?
Well, I'll take the first part of that question real quick and turn it over to Anna or Todd. Really, the needs were pretty simple. Kids are not connected to the internet. They can't learn and be educated like all the rest of the families who are connected to the internet. And so very quickly came up with short-term and long-term solutions. And so, you know, the short-term solutions were equip buses with Wi-Fi connections, and we've equipped over 40 buses with Wi-Fi connections. We've pushed Wi-Fi out from inside the schools into the parking lots so people can literally walk up or drive up and connect to the internet. We had a huge initiative working with service providers Cox and Lafayette Utility System, where those folks really came to the table as great partners and provided us with some solutions where, through the Attorney General's opinion, the school board was able to allocate $1.5 million for us to address the needs of families at home. And so we can take public dollars during this pandemic, and we can send those over to the homes through LUS and Cox to connect homes to the internet. A lot of other initiatives that Anna and Todd can touch on, so I'll just pause and let them jump in.
Yeah, so, you know, this has been a pretty big project, but we like to think about connecting these students as digital transportation. So you can't do your schoolwork if school's not in session, if you are at home and you don't have an internet connection. So when we think about how we help our students learn, you know, internet right now is essential. So we don't know if at any given time our schools will have to go, you know, back to completely virtual. We've been lucky to be able to have all of the elementary school students in school, and most of the other, you know, students, you know, are going either A, B, which means they go every other day. So it's pretty exciting that we have a superintendent who is interested in working with the community and, you know, bridging this digital divide. There's a lot of work to be done, but we've had some really great partners in that. And, you know, one of the things that's so great about our community is how many different groups have gotten engaged in this. So we've probably had over 40 organizations that have participated in this across the board, you know, businesses, community organizations, and it's just really been a huge partnership.
The organizational aspects of this seem crazy. So you have some, first of all, you had to get so the Attorney General had to rule on whether or not you could use CARES Act funding for this. Is that correct? And then you had to bring together competitors, LUS and Cox. And then, now, you know, it's probably a lot of people's perception that anybody, you know, between the ages of 5 and 15 is plugged into the internet all the time, and that's all they do, and that's the problem. So I think this would come as a surprise that there's so many people that are, in fact, not able to access the internet. Has that been hard to work with those kind of perceptions?
Actually, no. It's been pretty amazing that people have really resonated to the initiative. We've talked a lot in our communities and around the state and the country about the digital divide. And, you know, there's things that are happening to help bridge that. But I guess in all of our humble opinion, not quick enough. And everyone that we have talked to about these initiatives from day one, it hasn't been, this is too much work, or this is going to be too hard connecting families and children, and, you know, it's not really that bad. It's actually been the opposite, Pearson. Everybody has jumped in and said, what can we do? How can we provide resources, manpower, equipment, technology? It's really been overwhelming. I mean, we've had probably over 100 organizations been in touch with us over the last 6 months to help us with this initiative.
Who's eligible to get this benefit, and how does it work?
You want to take that one, Todd?
Yeah, I'll jump in. And, you know, Pearson, I was going to say that I think, you know, the way this all got started, you know, the three of us have worked together on various education-related initiatives over the last couple of years. And when we got going, the idea was cast a wide net. And because no one knew what would work best or fastest, we kind of started doing everything we could. And I think just as background, I wanted to mention that, you know, whenever you open a smartphone or a laptop, you know, you generally see Wi-Fi all around you, but you can't access it, you know. And I think that's a great metaphor for how frustrating some of these challenges are, that how can we just bring, and as Ryan was mentioning, can we expand Wi-Fi into school parking lots? Can we enable Wi-Fi buses? Can we let folks know about CC's coffee houses and other businesses and libraries and places that have open internet? And what we determined after getting the Attorney General's opinion and after the school board allocated some funds to address this issue was that we would, you know, we'd sort of try everything. But the baseline for qualification was for free internet provided, filtered academic internet provided from LPSS, you had to qualify for the free or reduced lunch program the student did. And also, you'd have to not currently have internet in your home since July 1st. You couldn't have internet. But, you know, it's also worth mentioning that when we said we're going to try everything, one of the things that we were happy to kind of play a small role in was publicizing the discounted, low-cost packages, because qualifying students who can receive free or reduced lunch, they can, their families for $10 a month can receive open internet, where you get the entire internet if you qualify. It's a connection that for $10 a month, three different providers locally provided. We have information on that, and that gets you kind of the world. But then again, if you can't afford that or you can't make that happen for you, the school system is able to provide this innovative program we put together, this Link and Learn project, where you can get filtered academic Wi-Fi to your house. So basically, you will get the same sort of interaction you get at school, where you can get to the academic site, the educational site you need. So this is the day that we are sort of telling everyone, if you can get the $10 plan, get it. And if for some reason you can't, please apply with your base school at LPSS, and we will get you a free internet connection to help you do your schoolwork and your homework.
Now, this has to be installed, right, at households. So that's where LUS and Cox come in. They go out and install equipment at the house to receive the internet. Is that what happens?
That's right. And you know, I mentioned kind of trying every solution. So, yeah, we will work with them to check the addresses. The school system's got a great team over there. And if LUS can reach you, great. If LUS Fiber can reach you, great. If Cox can reach you, great. If they can't, we have some hotspots available. And beyond that, we're looking into some other solutions. We are really kind of testing some kind of a groundbreaking sort of next-generation technology. We're again, working every angle we can so that Wi-Fi can become ubiquitous for folks.
Now, let's talk about that just for a second. So in this sense, is the internet the highway of the 20th century? I mean, some people see it as essential to be a participant in the economy today. Would you agree with that?
I think absolutely. Yeah, go ahead, Anne.
Oh, no, I was gonna absolutely agree with that statement. But one of the things about the program that we're working on with the school system, it provides academic access. So as we think about, you know, our community's workforce, how many employers have had to, you know, have their employees work remote, we know that academic access that the school system provides, it's not going to support them. So there still will be a digital divide beyond that. And so, you know, it's really exciting that we have, you know, AT&T, Cox, and LUS Fiber, and then actually CapTel and Vermilion Parish came on board too, offering $10 a month options for families. And with that open internet, that means that if a parent's at, you know, SLCC, that they can, you know, work on their schoolwork. If they're at, you know, their work, their office is working remotely, they can work on that. So, you know, that's really what we need, is this broader open access. That's how families, you know, really are bridging the digital divide. However, in order for our students to be able to learn, academic access will do it. You know, it's really important to be able to provide that digital transportation to our students.
Well, you know, what you just said prompted an idea in me, and that was that, well, the kids get access to the internet if they get this $10 open internet, but also adults in that household then would have access for other kinds of internet things like job training or participation. So it, in some sense, is kind of a jobs program as well as an education program.
I would say absolutely to that. And, you know, the opportunity here is to get this whole community better connected. You know, there are so many things with the pandemic. If you wanted to, you know, not just educate yourself, but participate in a program at a Boys and Girls Club or at a church, or, you know, again, watch a council meeting, any sort of thing. There's so many opportunities available. And yes, we're really trying to get folks to prioritize their internet connectivity and to take advantage of all that is there. And I think that, you know, the forward-thinking stuff that the efforts that the school system has made here is really, you know, we're kind of leading the pack in Louisiana right now, and that's where we want to be. If we want to be out there sort of pushing the limits for what's possible and what children can achieve with the right tools in their hands.
And I'll just say, you know, piggybacking on what Todd just said, I think it's so important for us to let the community know what we have in Lafayette Parish right now is very special, and we have to take advantage of it. It's no secret that we've been last in academic outcomes and achievements in our state forever, and we've become numb to it. And so what we've put together through this community is an amazing leader in Irma Trostclair, our superintendent of public schools. She has an executive team that's doing some tremendous things, and not only leading, but leading through a pandemic. And you know, at the BSEE board level, at the state level, people are really taking note of what's happening in Lafayette Parish. And you know, what we're dealing in, Pearson, is this is not a brush fire. You know, the academic outcomes issue in Louisiana right now is a forest fire, and we need to make note of that, stop being numb to it, and start taking advantage of the opportunity for us all to engage, because we have some incredibly smart, talented young men and women who can achieve so much more if we provide them with the opportunities.
One thing I want to stop right now and reintroduce everybody in case you just tuned in. We're talking today with to Dr. Anna Osland, Mr. Todd Mouton, and Mr. Ryan DiMaggio, who are together leading the Love Our Schools, Link and Learn initiative to provide internet access to homes of where students are housed but lack it. One question I had about this was I was thinking about Link and Learn, and I was wondering about Lafayette Online Academy, which is also part of the school system. Did that play out? That's been enormously successful in terms of at least numbers in this COVID reopening of schools. So did that play into your discussions at all with your initiative?
I think absolutely. I think that at the end of the day, connectivity, we like to say, is just a 1 yard line. You know, you have to get on the internet to access these things, but actually engaging with meaningful content, learning, you know, valuable material, and achieving and, you know, testing and really learning is, you know, 99 yards away. And I think that the Lafayette Online Academy has, you know, really mushroomed. It went from something like 200 students last year, and it's, you know, now in the 8,000 to 10,000 number of students. And, you know, that is really a proving ground for virtual education. It's not distance learning with a teacher. It's a lot of self-guided resources. And I think that it's sort of like I mentioned earlier that we're kind of trying everything at once, every approach to reach folks with connectivity, but also with meaningful content. And I think that the Online Academy is breaking a lot of ground for what is possible and may be possible. And then meanwhile, you have students in grades 6 through 12 at LPSS that are attending school on alternate days. And so they're working on some of the same and some different educational materials on their off days. And, you know, this is sort of the school of the future. The Attorney General's opinion that we received this summer, the school board requested it. It essentially said that internet connection is sort of like a piece of the textbook. It's almost like, you know, a book might have a binding and a cover, and you know, that may not contain the educational information, but it's how you deliver it. It's how you're able to connect and participate. And I think we're very grateful for that opinion. And I should mention that the Attorney General said that it would be okay in this light of this pandemic to spend public funds to reach folks who can't afford internet access. And he also recommended that access be filtered. In other words, to protect children from some of the dangers of the internet, which are not as, you know, well known as certain other public dangers. And so that's why we've developed this program where providers are providing filtered internet or through the LPSS system. And I just want to mention too that those applications are open. There's a deadline of October 30th. We've received over 500 to date. As we mentioned earlier, we think there are about 5,000 homes out there that don't have internet access currently of LPSS students. And we're trying to get those applications in. They need to be signed and turned into a student-based school. And that just begins that process of filtered academic internet, just like on a school campus. But as we mentioned earlier, there are also open internet plans available from, you know, multiple providers for $10 a month. So there are a lot of opportunities for people to connect here and to really sort of move our system forward through learning content and also connectivity efforts.
That's amazing. Did you get some pushback on the $10 price for internet access for homes from people who are saying, wait a minute, I pay, you know, $62 or I pay $90 or I pay significantly more. How come? Did you get any pushback on that?
No,
no. Don't speak all at once.
Well, yeah,
I was gonna just say that Ryan was the one who said, "Let's get all the providers in a room," mm-hmm. and that was on June 4th.
Yeah,
and yeah, Ryan, you can tell that story, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll just, you know, Irma said, you know, how do we do this? I said, well, we need to get the providers in the room together, and she said, well, how do you do that? I said, you just call them, and we called them and said, hey, can we all meet next Thursday? And they said, absolutely, and we came together and had a very candid discussion about what was ahead of us. And Pearson, interestingly, there's not been really any negative pushback by anyone. So folks who are paying $100 a month right now are not complaining, well, I want the cheaper internet service, you know, and it's just, you know, the internet service providers came to the table and they didn't say, well, it's too difficult for us to reduce our rates down. They actually went back and figured out ways to reduce the rates and to offer the packages, because what we've realized is we can talk all day long about all the reasons why people can't afford the internet and can't afford the situations that they're in. And the truth is we just need to kind of lend folks a hand, especially in this pandemic, and give them a bit of a foot up so that we can all be on a level playing field, because the end goal is better performance and academic outcomes and a better community for our people in Acadiana. And that's what everybody's focused on.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. So what would success look like now? You said there are about 5,000 households in the area that don't have internet access. You've had about 500 applications so far. So you're a tenth of the way to getting everybody internet access, perhaps. So what's a short-term success look like? What's long-term success look like?
So, Pearson, you know, we're actually not totally sure how many families that didn't have internet in May. So the 7,000 student and 5,000 family number was from a survey that the school system did in May. Since then, we've been aggressively promoting the $10 a month option, and we know that many families did choose that. And so we haven't had a comprehensive survey to see, you know, which students still don't have internet. But for us, you know, your question was, you know, what does success look like? For us, success looks like students able to do their schoolwork in whatever form that is, you know, whether it means that you've gotten the $10 a month plan, you apply and receive the free internet option, or if you find other ways to, you know, get connectivity. What we want is for students to be able to participate in learning. And for me, and, you know, for Lincoln Learn, really, that's the goal. The goal, you know, as Todd said, internet connectivity is the one-yard line. You know, the real goal is for our students to be able to, you know, to be educated in the way that, you know, is necessary during this pandemic. One of the other things that I'd just like to bring up about success that's been really exciting is how our business community has stepped up to also think through what are the ways that we can look at innovation. As we think through how we're connecting with students, what are other things that we can do to make sure that, you know, we're meeting the needs of the whole family, that we're delivering new ways of thinking through education content and how we deliver it. We're thinking through how healthcare is delivered in different ways. And so, you know, one of the outcomes of this project that's been really exciting is just thinking through the way that our community innovates. And we know that it is an extremely innovative community, and this project has really brought that to the forefront.
Well, I think it's certainly a testament to you guys and your vision, but also to the community stepping up. You know, I was thinking about the impact on students from not having internet is, in fact, a disparate impact. So we know that students from less affluent households suffer all kinds of kind of lag behind in academic gains. And then you get a crisis like COVID, and it kind of accentuates that gap between students from affluent households and students from less affluent households, in the sense that the affluent households can do all the things that are necessary to keep their children's education going during the pandemic, but maybe less affluent households are not able to do that. Would you speak to that at all?
I think the superintendent, Irma Trostler, herself said that, you know, it's just not equitable that on one side of town, a student is preparing a science fair project using digital spreadsheet tools, and on the other side of town, a kid might have a poster board. And, you know, the digital connectivity can really help to level the playing field. You know, some of the things we're looking at, we have, again, just generous community volunteers. I mean, I think one of the great things about this town is that we have a great history of collaboration and shared inspiration. And I think a lot of folks have come together, and there are some things that are real forward-looking that, you know, where does all this go? How can this connection be used by after-school programs and tutors? And how can, you know, when you talk about things like robotics clubs that may only exist in certain schools, how can those expand to other campuses, and how can this sort of virtual connection enable learning from, you know, across the public and private school divide, for instance? much less the geographic divide. And so I think we're really trying to, and again, I can't say enough about the, there are business partners, there are nonprofit partners, there are, anyone we invited to a meeting basically showed up, and everybody's pretty much stuck around and found a piece of this puzzle that they think they can help with. And I think that kind of goes back to that metaphor about how Wi-Fi is all around us, you just can't get on it. Well, I think there are resources we may not even be aware of in our community. And just by sort of casting a wide net, inviting lots of folks to the party, we live in this world of Zoom meetings now, and it's amazing how we can get on with folks in New Orleans or East Baton Rouge Parish and you know, folks with, you know, multi-state, regional, national interest, and we can have these conversations, and we can just sort of show a slide deck. And so I think that's a metaphor for what these children, these students are going to be able to do. They can connect to the world with this internet reach. And so I think that in the long run, I think school is going to look different. In the short run, we've got to be prepared to toggle. I mean, you know, there's obviously a, there's things like hurricane season. There's a pandemic. There are many challenges, and learning really should be year round. It should be available to students at all times and in all modalities. And so, I think that this isn't just about an internet connection. This is about a community working on a community problem. And again, I'm happy to say that because of all the different folks who have contributed financially, time, ideas, and other forms of support, we really are making progress on a lot of fronts.
We need to shout out to the One Acadiana, to the Pew Foundation, and the Schumacher Foundation for their support, as well as the LPSS with this initiative. We've got about a minute and a half left. Quickly, did you model your program or your outreach or Link to Learn on other areas? Did you think about what other areas were doing, or was this just kind of seat of the pants?
Yeah, really, it was seat of the pants. I mean, it started last year with Love Our Schools with Dr. Schumacher and Nick Pugh and Matt Stoller, Bob Giles, and Pastor Jacob Baranza coming together and allowing us an opportunity to bring 2,000 to 3,000 people together at 9 schools on one day to fix about 100 service projects. And that turned into, how do we fix the digital divide? And really, I don't think any of us had the answer back in June. We just threw a bunch of things at the wall, and a lot of them seemed to stick. And since then, they've come to fruition through cooperative efforts of the entire community in the school system. And so what we are seeing, though, is a lot of people in the community, the state, the country, are doing a lot of the things that we have done. There's not many that we've come across, I think, that have successfully implemented as many initiatives as we have. And we have a really long-term solution that we're working on that's very innovative and forward-thinking. And we hope in the next few months that we can bring that to the community.
Well, let me sum up your message right now, and that is that if you are a student or you're a parent of a student in Lafayette, Acadiana, and you have you can't afford the internet, you don't have internet at home, you can apply at your LPSS-based school now to get $10 low-cost open internet, or in some cases, school-based internet for absolutely nothing. So please take advantage of that. We've been talking today to Anna Osland of One Acadiana, Todd Mouton of the Pew Foundation, and Ryan DiMaggio, from the Schumacher Foundation. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
Enjoy Zydeco Blues and Old School R&B on the Zydeco Stomp, Saturdays from noon to 3, only on KRVS 88.7 FM and online at krvs.org.
Dial in your guitar and amp, and then dial in your radio for KRVS Thursday nights at 11 for the Minor Chord. We'll talk about guitars, amps, effects, and so much more.
Lucia Moon speaking, asking you nicely to tune in to Beat Current tonight at midnight, right after Hearts of Space, only on 88.7 FM KRVS.
This is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette Lake Charles at krvs.org.
Coming up next on Louisiana Eats, we discuss curating in the time of coronavirus with Historic New Orleans Collection President Daniel Hammer. He noticed a